Hello and welcome to Since the World's Been Turning. This podcast series is a journey through history, one guided by the lyrics of Billy Joel's song, We Didn't Start the Fire. We're returning to Southeast Asia this time and the theme of colonialism as we explore the story of Ho Chi Minh, the communist leader who passed away before he could see the end of the Vietnam War. It's difficult to cover Ho Chi Minh's history in one episode, but to help us, we're joined by special guest Professor Tuong Vu, who gives us a snapshot of Ho Chi Minh's life and activities. Tuong is a professor of political science at the University of Oregon, and he's written extensively about political movements in Vietnam, including the Communist Revolution. It's September the 2nd, 1945, the day that Japan signs a surrender document, officially ending the Second World War. About 4,000 kilometres away in Hanoi, Vietnam, a man with a wispy black beard is speaking in Ba Dinh Square in front of an audience of thousands. He looks younger than his 55 years. Although his words are in Vietnamese, he opens his speech with a quotation that might sound familiar. In fact, it's intended to try to resonate with Americans who he knows are watching and listening at home. All men are created equal, he says. They are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. Among them are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Ho Chi Minh then quotes from another founding document, the Declaration of Rights of Man and Citizen from the French Revolution, dated 1789. All men are born free and with equal rights, and must always remain free and have equal rights. Yet for more than 80 years, he says, launching into the body of his speech, the French have been abusing the ideals of liberty, equality, and fraternity in Indochina, enforcing inhuman laws, and stopping the Vietnamese people from being united as one nation. He accuses France of destroying the country economically, stripping it of resources, and weakening the Vietnamese with alcohol and opium. Now the war is over, the French want to re-establish their presence in Vietnam, yet they abandoned any authority they had when they fled and left the country in the hands of the Japanese. It's from the Japanese, not the French, Ho Chi Minh says, that the Vietnamese managed to wrest their independence, and they're not going back to the way things were. He says, quote, "The whole Vietnamese people, animated by a common purpose, are determined to fight to the bitter end against any attempt by the French colonialists to reconquer the country. We are convinced that the Allied nations, which at Tehran and San Francisco have acknowledged the principles of self-determination and equality of nations, will not refuse to acknowledge the independence of Vietnam." End quote. It's a passionate speech, designed to appeal to the post-war belief in freedom. But around the world, the Cold War is already casting a shadow. In this climate, will Ho Chi Minh manage to change anything? French Indochina comprises the areas known today as Vietnam, Cambodia, and Laos. These areas all officially come under French control in the latter half of the 19th century. But in reality, France has had economic interests in Southeast Asia for more than 100 years prior. Merchants are initially drawn there by the lucrative rubber and rice trades. There's truth to Ho Chi Minh's accusations of oppression. In the early 20th century, workers on French rubber plantations labour from sunrise to sunset, and they're subjected to detrimental conditions, including poor rations and violence from their overseers. Unsurprisingly, their mortality rate is high. Ho Chi Minh is born with the name Nguyen Sinh Cang in a small village in the Nghệ An province. It's widely believed that his birthday is in 1890, though during his life he gives different dates. Ho's father is a Confucian scholar and a civil servant, but Ho Chi Minh receives only the limited school education available to colonial citizens at the time. The family's fortunes also change after his father is dismissed from his job, with Ho apparently losing out on scholarships he might otherwise have been able to secure. The young Ho Chi Minh doesn't stay long in Vietnam. At the age of about 21, he gets a job working in the kitchen of a French steamship, which takes him around the world, including to the United States around 1912, as well as to Europe and to Africa. There are even sources who claim he managed to join the British Army during World War I, but he never saw any fighting due to illness. Our guest, Professor Tuong Vu, discusses Ho Chi Minh's travels in France, where he discovers socialism, joins the Communist Party, and takes the first steps towards trying to improve the oppressive conditions in his home country.
He went to France around 1919, and he worked, you know, in odd jobs like a janitor or a food peddler, a cook, and so on. So he worked in odd jobs in Paris, and then he joined many Vietnamese activists at the time living in France. Then he helped them. He helped a group of Vietnamese patriots to deliver a letter to the Allied leaders in Versailles in 1919. You know, when they met to decide what to do with the defeated powers, and then so the letter demanded political rights for Vietnamese from France. So Vietnamese at the time, as colonial subjects, did not enjoy any political rights. They didn't have, you know, freedom of association, freedom of speech. They did not have freedom of the press, and so on. So the letter basically demanded those rights for the Vietnamese without, you know, any mentioning of independence. But the letter was just submitted, and the Allied leaders did not respond. So that was kind of, you know, his first known political act as part of a group, and not, you know, he was not acting alone. Then he joined the activist circles, and he met many French socialists. And he joined them in their political activities, you know, like writing for the newspapers and so on. And he, in his talk to them, he always demanded that, you know, like the French socialists pay more attention to the colonies, the French colonies, the colonial people living under the oppression of France. But then the socialists at the time, the French socialists at the time, did not care too much about the colonies. Then eventually, you know, like in that, the French socialists broke into two groups, right? So the French socialists and then French communists in 1920, you know, following the influence from the Soviet, the successful Russian Revolution. The French communists broke away from the French socialists to found the French Communist Party in 1920. And Ho Chi Minh was at that founding meeting. And so he became a member of the French Communist Party in 1920.
Around 1922, when he's in his early 30s, Ho Chi Minh is sent by the Communist Party to the Soviet Union. Lenin is the Russian leader, and it's still early days for the new regime there. The Russian Revolution only took place in 1917, and the last days of the civil war are still being fought. Nevertheless, the atmosphere in Moscow is idealistic and positive. Ho Chi Minh studies at the Communist University of the Toilers of the East, sometimes known as the Stalin School, which attracts people from around the world and is set up specifically to train revolutionaries from other countries. In the 1920s and 30s, Ho Chi Minh is a quiet character who keeps a low profile. But he's found his cause. He's astute and capable, and behind the scenes, he's very busy. Our guest tells us now about Ho Chi Minh's time in Russia and his subsequent travels to China and Southeast Asia, where he works as a communist recruiter and trainer.
The Communist International at the time, at first, they were mostly concerned about the communist movement in Western Europe more than in Asia or Africa. So Ho was joining other activists from Africa and Asia and Latin America to advocate for greater support from the Comintern for those communist movements in other places. That was 1922 to 1924. And then he went to China. He was sent to China in 1924 to work for the Soviet delegation at the time. There was the Soviet Union sent a delegation to help Sun Yat-sen in China to organize a movement to unify China. So Sun Yat-sen was the leader of the Chinese Nationalist Party, but then he accepted union with the Chinese Communist Party to fight the warlords in China at the time. So the Soviet Union was sending military advisors and military equipment and aid to help the Chinese revolutionaries, who were both, you know, nationalists and communists, to reunify China to defeat the warlords. And Ho was sent to southern China, and he was working for the Soviet advisors, and he was working with Chinese communist leaders like Zhou Enlai to train young revolutionaries for the army. And Ho took the time to also recruit revolutionaries from Vietnam to be sent to China for training. So he trained them. He founded an organization called the Youth Revolutionary League in southern China. They published a pamphlet on revolutionary strategies. They also published a newsletter, and they also operated many classes for young people smuggled in from Vietnam. And then later on, you know, sent back to Vietnam to organize the movement there. And for a few of them, they went on to the Soviet Union for further training. So Ho was actually building a communist movement for Vietnam from scratch as the representative of the Comintern for Southeast Asia.
Ho Chi Minh is active across the region. He travels to Singapore to help set up the Malayan Communist Party, and to Siam, now Thailand, where he connects with both Siamese revolutionaries and ethnic Vietnamese living in the country, before returning to Hong Kong in 1930. Unfortunately, he's arrested there by the British the following year, and he spends a year in jail before going into hiding. He reappears in Russia in the mid-1930s, and he stays there for a few years, studying, working, and teaching other revolutionaries. As World War II begins, he asks to be returned to China, and finally he makes his way into North Vietnam, where he continues to organize groups of resistance fighters. It's his first time home after about 30 years abroad. Tuong Vu tells us about his time in Vietnam and his reinvention as the legendary Ho Chi Minh.
An organization called Vietnam Independence League, that's shortened for Viet Minh. And he founded this organization with the mission to fight for liberation of Vietnam from French rule. And the organization simply called for national unity. It doesn't mention anything about communism or socialism. And he also came up with a new name for himself, which is Ho Chi Minh. So he was operating under many aliases, many names, just to avoid the French security from knowing him or tracing him. And then in 1941, he came up with this new name, Ho Chi Minh, that would become the best known name of him ever since. So he was hiding his communist background because he knew that the Allies did not like communists, right? So he hid his communist background, and his organization did not mention anything about communism or socialism. Then they organized among the ethnic minorities living in northern Vietnam near the border. They organized the Viet Minh, like I said, an organization. They also recruited young men, women, tried to organize a small guerrilla band to support them. And then they also helped the Allies, trying to help the Allies to fight the Japanese, which were occupying Southeast Asia at the time and Southern China. So they were helping the Allies, and then they also received support from the Allies, especially from the U.S. during Second World War.
By 1941, France has been conquered by Germany, and a puppet state, the Vichy government, has been put in place. Meanwhile, Japan, Germany's ally in the Pacific, has arrived in Indochina and is establishing their control there. The Vichy French are still nominally in charge, and Ho urges Vietnamese citizens to resist both the French and the Japanese. In August of 1945, the atomic bombs fall on Nagasaki and Hiroshima, and Japan finally agrees to surrender, leaving a power vacuum in the places they conquered, including Vietnam, Malaya, and Siam. Ho Chi Minh takes the opportunity to seize power in Vietnam and to establish a government, the Democratic Republic. But the conflict in the area is far from over. Our guest tells us now about post-war Vietnam and the start of the First Indochina War.
Then that was, just right after the Japanese surrender, and the French had not been back to the country, right? They were kicked out by the Japanese. Then Ho and his government began to mobilize the people to fight the French. They tried to set up a state to govern the country. They organized an army to get ready. So Ho was the president of that government of the Democratic Republic of Vietnam, and he led the effort to mobilize people to resist the French return. And when the French returned, first in southern China, there were many Vietnamese groups that were trying to fight the French, among which was the communist. Then Ho also ordered a war against the French. After trying to negotiate unsuccessfully for Vietnamese autonomy within the French Union. So after about a year trying to negotiate with the French unsuccessfully, Ho declared war against France, and organized a war, waged a war from a base near the Chinese border.
Ho's army struggles to fight the French, who have superior technology and are better organized. And his attempt to appeal to the Americans falls on deaf ears. The US are afraid of communism spreading, so they are backing the European power, not Ho's followers, who are known as the Viet Minh. But as the Chinese communists begin to win their own civil war, they offer assistance to their Vietnamese comrades, providing them with military aid and diplomatic recognition. If you're interested in hearing more about the Chinese Civil War and Chinese leadership, take a listen to episode 58 of our series on the enigmatic politician Zhou Enlai, Chairman Mao's second in command. Professor Tuong Vu now discusses the reforms that Ho Chi Minh managed to make in Vietnam with Chinese help. He also tells us about Ho's ruthless streak, which was turned against Vietnamese landowners.
So Ho and his government were able to carry out, implement a new system with Chinese advice to basically implement socialist policies such as land reform and tax reform. So Ho government organized a land reform in their areas, which is basically a class struggle in the countryside. They mobilized poor farmers to rise up against the rich farmers and the landlords to demand the land. Ho also purged the movement of participants, purged the party of members who came from middle class, wealthy family backgrounds to create a new army, to create a new government based fully on the working classes. So they carried out that reform during which tens of thousands of people were executed, like landlords and rich farmers, and even many middle farmers also executed during that phase of radicalism. Then Ho also went to Beijing and Moscow to try to obtain Soviet and Chinese support for the war, which he received. And then eventually they fought the French to a standstill. And then they won the Battle of Dien Bien Phu in 1954, and the French agreed to withdraw from Vietnam. And Vietnam was divided into two halves, right? So the first half was under the communists, and the second half was under the French, later given to the Vietnamese nationalists.
The Battle of Dien Bien Phu is a siege that takes place in a rugged mountainous valley. The French underestimate their opponents. They're not expecting the Viet Minh to successfully bring artillery into the area and attack an important airbase. Thousands die on both sides, and it goes down in history as a great, though unexpected, victory for the Viet Minh. If you'd like to know more about the battle itself, you might like to check out Dien Bien Phu Falls, another of our earlier episodes in this podcast series. Following their decisive defeat, the French agreed to withdraw their forces. And now the Americans take a more dominant role in Vietnam as they try to contain the threat posed by communism. A right-wing government is set up to oppose Ho Chi Minh in southern Vietnam, dividing the country along the 17th parallel. With this, the foundations are being laid for the start of the Vietnam War. In 1955, fighting breaks out between North and South Vietnam. Tuong Vu discusses Ho Chi Minh's goals and the involvement of foreign powers, which led to the war lasting until 1975, making it one of the longest conflicts of the 20th century.
They just tried to overthrow the Southern government. They call that government a foreign lackey, but at the same time, they were receiving Soviet and Chinese aid as well. So both were independent governments, but then the North relied on the communist bloc, whereas the South relied on the Western bloc, and they were fighting each other. And so Ngo Dinh Diem was not popular among some Southern groups, and he was overthrown in a coup with U.S. support. After that, U.S. Sent troops into South Vietnam to fight directly for a few years. That began in 1965. Then, but the North kept sending troops into South Vietnam, and the U.S. tried, but it followed a wrong strategy. And so it was winning militarily, but then it became very unpopular among Southern Vietnamese, and also it created instability, political instability in Southern Vietnam, and it was unable to force North Vietnam to stop the support for sending troops, stop the war against South Vietnam, basically. Ho Chi Minh was throughout his career, except in a very short time in the 1940s, he was very critical of the West. He was critical of Western imperialism. He was critical of Western racist culture. He was critical of capitalist society and economy for its exploitation of the working classes. And he truly believed in socialism since the 1920s. He truly considered Vietnam, the future of Vietnam, as belonging to the communist bloc. He wanted to build socialism in Vietnam. He wanted to make Vietnam a communist country, just like the Soviet Union and China. So the communists in Vietnam under Ho's leadership tried to unify the country under their rule so that they can carry out communist, socialist policies throughout the country. They were not satisfactory with, control just North Vietnam, just like North Korea that wanted to dominate South Korea. So North Vietnam also wanted to dominate South Vietnam. The war continued until the U.S. wanted to give up, and the U.S. was able to reach out to China and the Soviet Union. And so U.S. felt like it did not have to fight a war in South Vietnam anymore to stop communism, because it was already able to establish relations with China and the Soviet Union. So U.S. stopped supporting South Vietnam, whereas the Soviet Union and China continued to support North Vietnam, allowing North Vietnam to win the war in 1975. But Ho Chi Minh had already died in 1969, in the middle of the war. He was 79 years old when he died, and he died of old age and perhaps of some diseases that we don't know. So he died in 1969, when the country was still divided and when the war was still going on.
By 1975, war has devastated Vietnam. And in the aftermath, many pro-American Vietnamese choose to flee the country. It's since been estimated by Vietnamese authorities that the death toll in the country could have been as high as 2 million on either side. In the United States, the conflict polarizes ordinary people and creates growing anti-war sentiment. Nearly 60,000 American troops die or are reported missing, along with more than 200,000 South Vietnamese troops. Even today, in 2023, the reaction to the war is mixed. To some Americans, the intervention was justified and necessary. But others focus more on the negative impact on both the local people and the American soldiers who volunteered or were conscripted to fight. The war is still explored and re-explored in US history books, in literature, film, and music. Following his death in Hanoi in 1969 from a heart attack at the age of 79, Ho Chi Minh is succeeded as leader by Lee Duan. And as the war ends, he punishes the South Vietnamese who collaborated with the US, sending them to re-education camps where they often experience extreme hardship. Lee Duan also continues Ho's economic reforms, collectivizing farms and factories. In 1978, Vietnam comes into conflict with another communist regime, the Chinese-backed Khmer Rouge in Cambodia. The Vietnamese army manages to take the Cambodian capital, Phnom Penh, and remove them from power. This leads to a deterioration in relations with China and an even closer relationship with Vietnam's other ally, the USSR. Today, Vietnam is still officially a socialist republic, but in reality, it's become more and more similar to a capitalist society. Prior to COVID-19, tourism was booming, with young Westerners taking in the beautiful natural scenery and historically minded travellers taking in the opportunity to visit the sites of famous battles firsthand. Some American veterans have also been returning to Vietnam to put old ghosts to rest. Ho Chi Minh himself, the man who put everything in motion, was an incredibly complex figure. He was charismatic, clever, and willing to do whatever it took to achieve his goals. Despite not having a forceful persona like Stalin or Chairman Mao, he still created a successful cult of personality, and he was brilliant at communicating with common people. He was someone who worked tirelessly in the cause of freedom. But looking back from a modern viewpoint, what's his ultimate legacy? Professor Thuong Vu tells us about Vietnam today and what he feels Ho Chi Minh brought to the country.
Well, his legacy is mixed. He was fighting for freedom from France, but the country still doesn't have, the country is independent, but it's highly dependent on China today. The people don't have freedom, political freedom, because basically the Communist Party is ruling the country like a dictatorship. It doesn't allow freedom of speech, freedom of press. There's no private press allowed, only government press. That's spread propaganda, but not private press that allow people to express themselves. There's no freedom of association, organization. So all organizations must register themselves with the government and only operate with the with government permission. If they get government permission, they can operate. But if not, they must operate illegally. And people who criticize the government are frequently targeted, persecuted, and sentenced to years in prison, for just small criticisms of the government. No political parties are allowed to operate except the Communist Party. So there's no freedom and democracy in Vietnam. And this is how many years since Vietnam, Ho Chi Minh declared independence, from the France. That's like more than 60 years. So there's still that lack of freedom and democracy. In terms of economy, it's also mixed. So Vietnam was South Vietnam was developed at the level at about the same level with South Korea and Thailand and Malaysia in the 60s. But now the country is kind of far behind those countries. So economic development in Vietnam has lagged behind its neighbors a lot. Even you know after 30 years of reform, market reform, because of the pursuit of the attempt by Ho Chi Minh and his party to implement socialist policies in Vietnam.
Thanks for listening to Since the World's Been Turning. I'm Robin Harrison. Special thanks to our guest, Thuong Vu. Thuong is a professor of political science at the University of Oregon, who has written about political movements in Vietnam, including the history of the Communist Revolution. Thanks to Will McGillivray for the introduction music, and to our writer, Elena McPhee. Please join us again next time as we continue to explore the people, events, and places behind Billy Joel's iconic song. We're coming back for the second term of one of America's best-known presidents, Richard Nixon. For more episodes and information, you can follow NZ Pods, that's NZPODZ, on Instagram and Facebook, or you can visit our website, www.nzpods.com. That's nzpodz.com. Giving us reviews and ratings on your podcast service helps us to share this project with more listeners, so please do share your thoughts. We greatly appreciate your help in keeping this project going. Thanks again for listening, and please come back next time to hear more from Since the World's Been Turning.